Hello and welcome to the 110th edition of the GoMeanGreen.com Barbershop Podcast. This is Evan.
This is Harry.
Harry, we are here to talk North Texas football as usual. And this week we are talking about, I hate to say a moral victory, but you got to feel good about our loss to Kansas State.
It was a really good performance. It was really exciting. When's the last time we took a number 15th ranked team in the country right up to the wire like that? I got to tell you, I went into that game with real realistic expectations and was just thrilled with how it turned out. Now, we lost the game, and there were a lot of reasons for that, but at the end of the day, you take a team that was heavily favored, you ram the ball right down their gut. You know, you win the time of possession for most of the first half. I mean, it's hard not to be encouraged by a performance, you know, in front of 50,000 K-State Cat fans. I mean, it was just a really fun game for a lot of reasons, but the biggest being, if you're a North Texas fan, you're encouraged right now. I mean, you feel good about the program, even though we have two losses. They were against, you know, LSU, which is arguably one of the top two or three teams in the country, and K-State, you know, we don't know what's going to happen with K-State the rest of the season, but right now they're number 15.
Right. And, you know, the score was 35-21. They were favored by 28 points. So when you look at that, you know, we covered the spread. I had some one of my friends that went to Oklahoma was complaining to me that we screwed up his bet. Well, that's his problem. But it was really nice. And when you watch the game, I went back and watched the game, and I was at a wedding. So I was watching the play-by-play on Yahoo and just reloading like crazy. To see what was going on. And that first touchdown was right about Val's time. And let me tell you, I was ecstatic. 30 seconds later, not so happy. But, you know, it was still, you know, special teams. Why do we always do that? Why do we always get that emotional high and then go, wait, we can't be this good. Let's go ahead and give them back.
It's a North Texas trait. I don't know what to tell you. If you look at that drive and what we were able to accomplish, I know I was pinching myself saying we're getting 3 or 4 yards at a handoff against this vaunted defense. You know, we're making nice pass. You know, hey, let's give Derek Thompson some credit here, man. That guy had a heck of a ball game. He was very accurate. You go all the way down there. The Kansas State fans, I mean, it sounded like a mausoleum in there. I mean, it was just they were in shock. You score to go up by 7, and then you immediately let them come back and score on the special teams kickoff.
Exactly. Now, Todd, UNT grad, 90 grad in here mentioned, I'm curious to see what, if any, personnel changes on special teams we'll see this week. Do you think we'll see changes? Because, you know, special teams is kind of the players that are in there. What do you do? Or do you just, you know, what are we going to do about the kicking situation? Are we going to do it, try to get them boxed in the corner? I mean, what can we do on that? I mean, I never really think about the kickoff scenarios and how to make sure this doesn't happen again. I'm not too concerned with Troy this week as it was last week with Kansas State, but what do you do?
There's a couple of things that I saw, and I'm not the coaching staff, so take it with a grain of salt. But one thing is, that was a line drive kick. I mean, that kick was 20 yards ahead of the coverage. It went directly into the receiver's hands, you know. Sorry, Zach Olin, you got to take a ding on that, man. That was not a good kick. Kick it up high. Kick it out of bounds, for Christ's sake. But don't kick it directly to a guy that's probably one of the most athletic kick returners in the country. And then the second thing is, and I saw this against LSU, not just on kickoff coverage, but on punt coverage, we've got athletes. We have guys that are getting down there, but they're overrunning the play. It's just like, you know, you see 3 or 4 guys basically just go by the screen and then they disappear off, not to help on the play at all. So I think it's a combination of those two things. I know Coach McCarney was very disappointed by that.
Well, yeah, that was tremendous momentum. And let's look, we can't get by the fact that we were moving the ball. You know, during the game against Texas Southern, I was texting me and Rob out in California. We were discussing, you know, where are those short passes? Where every pass we seem to throw against Texas Southern seemed to be the long ball, and the touch was not there. And he was on target, 25 of 28. And you look, he was on target with those short passes. I love seeing it. Did we save them? Were we trying other things and just saving for the Kansas State game?
I just think he was on. I just think, which is a great sign for our season and our program, that a guy can bounce back from, golly, it had to be one of the worst performances he's ever had.
Right, and it was. I was right. 25 for 28, 208 yards, which, you know, 25 for 28, 208, you got to think there was maybe the long was 19 yards. He was sacked three times, and there's something I want to bring up on that, because one of those sacks was the whole controversial, did he get the face mask? So, you know, the bottom line is he had to get rid of the ball. That's the bottom line. You got to get rid of the ball in a situation like that. But, you know, having three sacks, and I'm going to go back to saying it should be only two that offensive line has given up.
Yeah, I mean, the offensive line is going to give up some sacks. I mean, that's going to happen. I don't think protection was an issue in the least in that game. On the play that you're talking about, that was on Derek Thompson. He should have thrown that ball away, and the whole face mask thing, I mean, it was just, you know, he can do better than that. But all in all, he had a fantastic game. He was very efficient. He didn't make a whole lot of mistakes. He made a few, but he didn't make a whole lot of mistakes against a very good defense. Now, Kansas State's got to play Oklahoma this week. They're going into the Big 12 schedule. We may look back 6 or 7 weeks and say, well, they weren't as good as we thought. But I think they're pretty good. I looked at that team and looked at the athletes that they've got and that quarterback that they've got. I really think that we've got something special here, and I just hope it carries over to this Troy game.
Yeah, no doubt. I think that they are good. I think that LSU was good. Are they the best? Well, you know, no, but we don't play. We tend to not play teams that are decent. We either play the best or we play a 1AA. We're not playing some of the other teams. You know, we're not playing the Houstons or SMUs this year. We're playing the best of the best. We're two top 25 teams. So, gauging our performance and beating the spread on both of those and showing damn near scaring the hell out of Kansas State, you got to think that our chances this week against Troy are great. Let's go for a few other stats here. Antoine Jimerson.
Jim,
as people want to call him here. You know, he ran for 70 yards, Brandon Bird, 66, and then Breland Chancellor, who just continues to amaze with 32. But seeing that first two running backs there and seeing what they did last week, kind of seeing them develop, you know, this could be the answer to the question we were at the beginning of the year, is what do we do without Dunbar? I think your answers are Jim Bird there.
Hey, if I told you before we played K-State that the rushing yardage would be 145 for North Texas and 143 for Kansas State in that game with that running quarterback that they've got, would you have bought into that? I mean,
well, would you have also think that we only had we had 208 yards passing and they had 230? I mean, these stats are pretty much dead on. We held, I haven't even scrolled down to the time of possession, but you got to think that we held onto that ball a long time. I mean, how many in the first half, how many total yards did they have?
Time of possession, we had it 37 minutes and 4 seconds. They had it 22 minutes and 56 seconds. So there's your answer right there. I mean, it was a – some people brought it up on the board. It was Dickey ball. I mean, it was Dickey ball, man.
I know.
But you know what?
It's a Buick.
I don't recall Dickey doing that kind of – having that kind of effectiveness against the top 15 team. I mean, I remember a lot of games against top 15 teams where we were – you know, down by 30, 40 points. So, you know, it was effective. It was a great game plan. I love the play calls. We seemed to keep them off guard. That one play, the handoff to Breland Chancellor, I mean, for the touchdown, that guy went untouched. I mean, they didn't have a clue of on that play. Got to give a lot of kudos to Mike Canales. Chico called a fantastic game. And, you know, the defense played pretty darn well. I mean, they held up for as long as they could. Second half, things kind of turned around a little bit.
Well, you know, there's a certain point where the depth is going to kill us. And we've got some guys, Trice, Lee.
The other corner.
Laramie
Lee had a great game, number 27.
Yes, Whitfield continues to do good
Another
things.
Another interception.
I'm a big fan of his now. I you got to look at these guys and go, these guys are really coming along, and these are young guys.
And they're young, and I mean they're inexperienced, but they're learning quickly.
We still continue to get beaten by the long ball. there's a time where there's going to be some busted coverage on there. Those long plays are going to kill us.
Our pass rush is killing us. I mean, that is very apparent. We did not get to that quarterback enough. We did not hit him enough. We did not sack him enough. And it's an ongoing issue that we're going to face for the rest of the year, because I don't care how good your secondary is playing. I think we all agree our secondary is playing a hell of a lot better this year than it did last year. But if you don't get pressure on the quarterback, I don't care. Even if it's a mediocre to crappy quarterback, they're going to be able to complete passes if they can stand back there all day. And we're not getting enough pass rush from the interior defensive linemen. You know, we've had some success when we've had a cornerback blitz and things of that nature. But when you do those blitzes, guess what happens? Big plays happen. So it's a concern. And I know having Brandon McCoy come back,
and that's
this
what
year,
my next point was up. We got Brandon McCoy back this week, the sergeant. He wasn't effective the first game, obviously, you know, the whole reason there. But we really need him to step up. Obviously, this Troy team is not as good as Kansas State, and we held our own. We need him to come in there with a commanding performance.
And another guy that they announced at the coaches show that is coming back that is not a defensive lineman, but he's a cornerback, and he's probably the best cornerback on our team right now, is Freddie Warner. And Freddie had blew out his ACL in a freak, you know, play in the spring. A lot of people thought he may not come back this year. They may redshirt him this year, but he's too good. If he's ready, my feeling is if he's able to come back, it's not going to be this week, but the following week against Florida Atlantic on the road, you got to bring him back, because that's a lot of games and conference that he could have an impact on. And, again, he's not a pass rusher, but because of his coverage skills, he could help the pass rushers get to the quarterback.
Yes, no doubt. It's good to have him back. Good to have Sarge back. You're looking at the tackles. You look at the stats here, and you see the names that we were expecting. Zach Orr, what can you say about him?
He's a great player. I mean, he's a great player. It's great to know we've got him for another year. I thought he had a great game. I also will have to say, if you look at these tackles, the tackle numbers here, a name that's showing up every single week is Laramie Lee, number 27. Had 11 tackles, led the team.
He led the team in tackles.
I mean, this is a kid that can really play some ball. And we saw that when he was in high school. You know, he was an amazing high school player, but you don't know how that's going to translate. And he's a little undersized, but you know what? He plays with heart, and he has great tackling. The thing I noticed in that K-State game, that guy knows how to tackle. And even if you're a little undersized, if you know how to wrap up and pull somebody's legs out, it doesn't matter how big they are. So that's been a real bright spot. Another name on here that's a huge bright spot is Derek Acoon. I mean, Derek is a sophomore this year. He wasn't even supposed to be a starting linebacker this year, but here he is making 5 tackles in the game and contributing throughout this entire season. So there's a lot of new names that we aren't used to seeing.
Yeah, you look at the list. Hilbert Jackson, Casey Obie, Zach Whitfield, Will Wright, Richard Abbey, Bellison, Mason Kirby. Those are the guys that have the most tackles on the team. Laramie Lee, though, is definitely standing out there. But you got to feel good about the way the defense is heading. You got to feel good, because when we came to the season, we knew that offensive line was going to be good. They've exceeded my expectations. But the running back situation we were concerned about, but I think the biggest question mark was defense. And having a third of the season already over, or quarter of the season already over, sorry, think about that. Quarter of the season's already gone. I feel really good about what we're seeing moving here. And these aren't JUCO transfers.
No, we're young, and we're only going to get better, and we're redshirting a lot of guys. I mean, there's a lot of guys I thought we'd see more of this season that are redshirting or maybe just playing special teams. So that's a good sign. You need to stay healthy. You know, you need to try to stay away from those injuries. We did lose Chad Polk. I don't know how long he's going to be out, but it looks like it's going to be a while. And so you don't want that injury bug to hit you. But right now, especially going into the Sun Belt, conference, you got to feel like we got a defense that can win.
What about the play calling? We were really concerned after the Texas Southern game, thought it was too conservative, wondering what are we going to see? We need something better than this against Kansas State. Do you feel like the play calling was there?
I was real happy with the play calling. I mean, I think, I mentioned Chico earlier. That was probably one of the best called games Chico's made. The one that comes closest to it was probably the last time we played Kansas State at Fouts, when he had, amazing offensive performance. But the difference is we had Lance Dunbar at that time. But that was a really – that's one of those games where you say, you know what, Chico's got a really bright mind, and for him to call some of those plays like he did and just have Bill Snyder and Kansas State kind of sitting there in shock, that's a great feeling. And so you got to tip your hat to Coach Chico. I thought defensively I thought the defense played well. The pass rush, that's a personnel issue, I think, more than a scheme issue. And the biggest, you know, downer really from a coaching standpoint has got to be those special teams. You know, that's really hurt us this season.
Yeah, they really got to pick it up there. Well, let's kind of review this as what three games, two losses, one win. What does this mean for the rest of the season? We're coming into the sweet spot of our schedule. I mean, when you look at this right now, we're playing Troy, Florida Atlantic, and Houston. To me, I'm looking at that, and we got a good game, an easy game, and an easy game. Or, you know, Houston, you never know. But you look at these, and you're going, these could be good games. These are winnable. We could be sitting here after halfway through the season and going, we're 3-3.
I wouldn't use the term easy.
Well, I say easy. I'm saying, I mean,
compared to K-State and LSU.
Yes, these aren't far-fetched games to win. I mean, you know.
My biggest concern right now is Troy. Troy put a lot of yards on Mississippi State. Mississippi State, we keep talking about LSU. Mississippi State's an SEC team. They're not LSU, but they're a pretty good team.
So is Arkansas.
Well, yeah, that's true. But, you know, so I'm worried about the team that we're going to be playing this week, and Troy scares me a lot because they have a lot of players.
Well-coached.
They're well-coached. They bring a lot of JUCOs and a lot of transfers in. So people think back to Troy last year when we won. Hey, man, this is a whole different ball game. I noticed they've got a big running back, fullback guy, you know, 6'1", 235 pounds that's all of a sudden become eligible this week right before the North Texas game. That's something else to consider. So I saw the press conference with Troy's coach, Larry Blakeney. He said it very well. This is going to be about turnovers. Okay, this is going to be about special teams. I think he said in penalties. He said if we can have less than 50 yards in penalties, if they turn the ball over more than we do, then we've got a real chance, you know, to do well in this game. And that same thing goes for North Texas.
Speaking of well coached, and I meant to do this before we started going into Troy, but Dan McCarney, you know, I've done a lot of soul searching, and I got to say that we're so used to these, man, the team gave it a good run. We, you know, it was really good. We were really close. Let's see what we can do. You know, McCarney's not settling that. He is trying to change the mindset of not only the team, but the fans into, no, we're expecting to win those games. We're expecting to compete in those games, not just get closer, come as a surprise. You need to have the mindset that this is a program and a team that can win. And it seems to be working. And with the students that showed up for that first game, and I got that feeling it's going to be the same crowd for the second, that mindset is something that a lot of us were like, I guarantee you, it's not just me. You were shocked to hear McCarney say, no, we didn't do. We needed to win the game. No, yeah. There's no moral victory here. We need to be a win, and it's made me really think. And you know, that's true. We need to have that mindset.
You know, I think the big difference with McCarney is you really get a sense, and any good salesperson understands this. You got to believe in the product that you're selling, and I think with our prior coach, I'm not going to go into names and everything else, but I don't think we got that feeling from him. I think with Dan McCarney, you really do believe that he believes that this team is going to do great things and that this program is going to do great things. And he is not going to accept anything less than being successful. And it starts to bleed over. I mean, maybe not as much last year. You know, we kind of had our ups and downs, but we still had a winning, you know, we had more wins than we'd had in a long time. This year, it's really starting to take effect. I see it on the board. I see it with the fans. People are really getting behind Dan McCarney and really believe that Dan McCarney is going to do something special at North Texas. And it's a great feeling. I mean, we haven't felt this kind of momentum in the program in a long, long time. You know, we're heading into game four right now, and I still feel the wind behind our sails, if that makes sense.
You're exactly right. And I think, you know, I think in the past years it's been a self-preservation because we've been these fans always waiting for something good to happen. And now it's like we know something's good to happen, and we got to get to the mindset that we won't accept anything but good things happening. And right. And I love it, and the fans love it, and they're feeding off of it. I try to listen to the coach's show on Monday night and listen to him, you know, discuss that, and he discussed that a lot. Now, I only heard about half of it because half of it, the technical difficulties, and we know how those go.
Yeah, we're very familiar with technical difficulties.
They were having some, but, you know, from what I heard, I mean, you just want to be there. You want to be in there in Rudy's, you know, grabbing a brisket sandwich and listening to him talk because he gets people fired up. And he's got the students fired up, and the students feeling that emotion in that first game and sticking around as long as they did because the emotion was high. You got to feel that that's just going to carry on. And just like you said, quarter of the way through the season, the wind is still in our sails.
Feels good. And it's a good feeling. And it's a feeling that I feel like Dan McCarney, the longer he's here at North Texas, the more we're going to feel that way. I mean, I just believe in the guy that much.
He's definitely made an impact. A lot of references to Dickey Ball.
Yeah.
This past game, we were doing what we can and running it up the middle.
You know, Dickey Ball was not a bad thing when Dickey was winning. You know what I mean? Dickey Ball is not necessarily a negative thing. I think Dickey Ball became a negative thing when we lost games and we couldn't score points and we didn't compete. But I think I love that game plan. I think that was the perfect game plan. You don't want to run and gun, you know, with a K-State team that has all these athletes loaded up on one on top of another. I think I give Chico an A-plus on that game call. And if you want to call it Dickey Ball, go ahead and call it that. You know, if we can do Dickey Ball again for Troy and get a W, then I'm all for it.
I will say this. You know, we were talking about, and you and I started discussing this right before we came in here. When was the last time we felt this good kind of after any time, you know, after the season started? And I'm have to go back to the game we played Ball State.
Yeah.
All right, we won at Ball State.
You went to that. You and me, Rob.
That Rob and I went up there to that game. We played Ball State.
It was on national TV.
That's right. It was 2009. We came out on 20-10 national TV, lost to Ohio in second overtime. And when you look at that, that should have been two wins right there. We ended that season 2-10 after winning the first game against Ball State. And you look at that, 30-31, and it's just amazing how good we felt after that first win and how bad we felt after the second the overtime loss.
And the sad thing is that this Troy game is just like an Ohio game. I mean, frankly, this is a game we're playing at home. We're going to have good weather. We're going to have a good crowd. We need a good performance here. We really do. And losing to Troy at home would set us back. And unfortunately, that's kind of where the program's been over the past, 7, 8, 9 years. Is that when we have these opportunities, we let it slip through our fingers. Hopefully we won't do that on Saturday.
All right, let's go ahead and look at the Sun Belt scores, talk about these. I know a lot of people have reviewed these, but let's talk about somebody in the room just said Ohio loss was very depressing, killed us, great rain game. That was it was pretty memorable.
Well, it was a monsoon, if you recall. I mean, it was like pouring down. And what? Who was it? Who was the receiver that dropped the pass? I mean, literally, it was.
Well, Darren McClain.
No.
I'm not holding a grudge, but at Texas Tech, Darren McClain was.
Well, that's one of them. But there was a JUCO receiver in that Ohio game that literally the ball hit him right in the chest, and we would have won the game.
Hey,
and it fell out.
Somebody just posted. Yeah,
Outlaw. There's Adman.
Outlaw.
Yeah, it was
all
Michael
right.
Outlaw.
Thank you, Adman. Eastwood Eagles said the same thing. That was very deflating. You know, and we just have.
And then was it Navy or Army after that?
They just said our memories suck. They do, because I just, you know, trying to think of these games and who it was. No, we played, that was the year before, or another year after. I just looked at the thing, but I put it
But
away.
You remember that we had the flyover and everyone was excited.
Dude,
we had
that
a huge
was awesome.
Crowd.
Yeah,
it was
a
awesome.
Huge crowd.
And we lost.
We lost after scoring record amount of points. It was like the most points scored, you know.
In any North Texas game ever, and we still lost.
It was like that Dickey game where we played and we had like six overtimes, wasn't it?
FIU.
Yeah. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about Sun Belt scores from last week. Obviously, the one that everybody was talking about was Louisiana's Monroe's lost to Auburn in overtime after beating Arkansas overtime. What does Monroe have right now?
They have a great quarterback. They have a very senior-laden team. All of their guys from last year are back. They've got some talent. They got a good coach. Todd Berry does a damn good job there. And you got to say they're the favorite to win it all. So throw everything back up in the air. But, you know,
a good quarterback makes a difference. Look at Houston.
It makes, no kidding.
Houston wants to, I wish they could have that reload.
Well, they haven't given up on the guy at Houston yet. And, you know, that scares me a little bit too, not to get ahead of ourselves. But, you know, we've always been really a breeding ground for quarterbacks to either bounce back or second and third string quarterbacks.
Air Force, the game against Air Force, I don't know, 8 years ago, you know, they give him a second string quarterback. We're like, all right, rams it down our throat. Option killed us.
Yeah.
But Monroe's got something. And I want to say this, and I didn't say this a minute ago, Derek Thompson. After week two, we were just going, what do we have here? We were looking at Brock coming in. We're going, what do we got? The guy bounced back better than I could have ever hoped, and my hat's off to him. Derek, you did good.
Yeah. And Evan apologizes for all the bad things that he said.
Didn't say him alive on the air. but, no, really, he really came with his A game in front of 50,000 fans and put it together. And this is not just like a good pass here and there. I mean, sustained drives with good short on the top pass. I mean, online passes. And you got to call. One other thing I didn't mention was the Chico play with the end around with Chancellor.
That's what I said earlier.
Well, okay, I'm sorry. I was reading the post.
That's okay.
But that play call right there had the cameraman and everybody fooled, because I remember rewinding it and listening to the guy goes, oh, hey, they scored. Wow, had everybody fooled there.
It made me think of, remember the Oklahoma-Boise bowl game, that Statue of Liberty play when they went for two? It was that kind of play. It was just, it was a trickery. It you know, literally, he walked right. He could have walked, you know, he could have crawled into the end zone and they wouldn't even have come close.
Right.
It was just such a great call. And again, you give Chico tons of kudos for that. That was just a well-called offensive game plan.
Let me go ahead and go ahead and plug a game for this week. Friday night. Do you know what game is Friday night?
No.
Baylor at Louisiana Monroe.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's Friday. That's, yeah.
Baylor at Louisiana Monroe. Is that game on TV? I think it is. I think it's on ESPN. It's on ESPN. Baylor at Monroe. Baylor's 2-0. Monroe's 1-1. I don't know who's going to win this game. Right now, the line is Baylor by 7.5.
Well, let's be honest. I mean, Baylor just absolutely dismantled SMU to start the season. They're pretty good. I would have to tell you that would be one of the biggest upsets in a long, long time. But hey, look what Louisiana Monroe did to Arkansas.
I know. Just seeing these two teams play in Monroe is what's really killing me, because
how do they do that?
I don't know how that stadium with that super, you know, that if you have any kind of vertigo, you cannot get. I got some serious, and they're the ones that have the sliding glass patio door suites on the other side, where we busted out their Jumbotron because it's so close to the field. There, it's going to be an interesting game, and it's Friday night.
Let me add in here too. You know, we have that weekly pick'em game on GoMeanGreen.com. We got about 50 or so guys in it. Right now, the trend on that game is 89.3% Baylor. I could swear to you it was 100% before like the last week or so. So a lot of people are picking up on it, and that'll be a fun game to watch.
It will be a fun game. I can't wait to see that. So, okay, we obviously know Monroe's got a little bit of game. Week three also saw Nebraska beat up on Arkansas State pretty soundly. Oklahoma State beat La pretty good, 65-24.
Killed them.
Oklahoma State either scores 65 or they lose.
That was with a backup quarterback too.
Glad somebody else has a problem with them. Central Florida beat Florida International by 13. You know, that's North Carolina beat South Alabama. South Alabama's just going to have problems. Western Kentucky beat Kentucky by 1 point. Mm. But it was a final in overtime, and whenever you see Western Kentucky beat Kentucky, you got to feel good. That's a Sun Belt win.
Hey, the Sun Belt is looking very treacherous this year. We know Louisiana Monroe, we've talked about. Lafayette took us to the school to the tool shed last year. It was a closer game than that, but still, they dominated us pretty much in the fourth quarter. We saw on our own home turf what Western Kentucky can do. They're big and strong, and they love to smash mouth.
Oh yeah!
And getting a win against home state Kentucky, I mean, that's got to do a lot for their confidence. I'm just going down. Where's the easy wins in the Sun Belt this year?
Well, I don't know. What a lot of guys here are saying, Monroe goes 500 in conference at best. Let's see. I don't buy the hype of ULM. I don't see how they improved drastically over a year. ULM consistently. Oh, great. Somebody just rolled. I think Monroe makes a run for the conference title. One victory against a team, you know, I could see that happening. But they're stringing together. They're nearly 2-0 against SEC teams. I don't care if it's a down year. It's an SEC team.
We're going to leave the Sun Belt, and it's going to be an interesting year. I mean, you look at it right now, it would be hard to say who's going to win it. It's wide open, and that's why this Troy game is so huge. I mean, from a confidence standpoint, you win that Troy game at home, you know, you're in play. You know, you're in play. You lose it, and you're digging out. So I'm real nervous about this Troy game, if you haven't noticed.
Tony's adamant. He doesn't buy it. Monroe's mad, he says. All right, listen, let me bring this up. Middle Tennessee beats Memphis. I thought Middle Tennessee was going to go 0-2.
Memphis is terrible.
They really got to be, because Middle Tennessee, well, anyway.
Memphis changed coaches this year. They've got all the leftover players. Memphis, you know, Arkansas State has beat them consistently every single year. Memphis is not very good.
As we talked.
Speaking of the devil, that's where Daryl Dickey is right now at Memphis. So.
Is he?
Yeah.
Good for him. So we also obviously already discussed this, but when you look at Middle Tennessee, I'm sorry, not Middle Tennessee. When you look at Troy, they lost to Mississippi State, which is ranked at 23. So there's some good there. Florida Atlantic got beat pretty soundly by Georgia. Now this week, obviously, we know what our game is against Troy. Louisiana Monroe Baylor, we talked about that. Florida Atlantic plays Florida Atlantic plays Alabama. Florida International plays Louisville. Those are both ranked teams we're up against in the Sun Belt. South Alabama plays Mississippi State, so that's the second Sun Belt team to meet them. Southern Miss, Western Kentucky, South Alabama, Mississippi. I think the real ones I really want to hear how it's going is the Baylor-Monroe game. I want to see if Baylor-Monroe comes down to an overtime game, three overtime games.
That would be something.
I will believe in the hype, and I'm hoping some of these guys will too. I don't want to overlook any of these teams. This is a better belt than we've seen in quite a while.
Yeah, no, it's anybody's conference to win right now. And, again, that Troy game is so huge for us.
All right, so before we start getting talking about stuff that really has no bearing, because we've talked about it. You know what? Let's talk about one thing before we do that. What kind of crowd? What kind of tailgating? The weather is supposed to be perfect, spot on, just like it was the first game for this game.
I'm predicting 25,000. And the reason for that is
this is not SMU count. This is actual.
This is actual butts and seats. I think we'll have it because family. We always have a good crowd for family weekend. I think we have good weather, like you said. I think the people that came to the last game are going to come back because they had a good time. And I think you'll add a little bit on top of that because of the K-State performance. I think K-State, everyone that watched that's got to get excited. And so I'm being optimistic.
And it wasn't a first-half excitement. That was excitement through most of the game.
Through the entire
game.
Right
into the fourth quarter. So, yeah, there's going to be a lot of people that saw that. Hey, let's go to the game. You know, that's a big deal. The weather's going to be good. It's Parents Weekend.
That's huge.
Always a good crowd for Parents Weekend. The students always have a really good showing on Parents Weekend. Now, they tend to leave after half or whatever. They have in the past. But when you got parents coming in, that side was already standing room only. It's going to be just crammed over there. Maybe the parents will move it around a little bit. That's fine. But it's still going to be a great showing. So,
and I think the alumni side will do better, too. I do. I think the alumni side will come out more than they did for Texas Southern. So that's what I'm thinking. That's what I'm guessing.
Yeah, I'm going to say 25. I think we should have a problem doing 25. So with that, we're going to go ahead and pause it for those of you listening along live. For those of you listening on via iTunes, you won't hear a difference. Sorry. I forgot what I was doing. All right, so sit tight. All right, joining us is the North Texas beat writer for the Dent Record Chronicle, Brett Vito. Brett, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
All right, Brett, tell us, obviously, you've written a lot about the other day. You had some quick hits on what your views were of the game. You know, now that you've had a couple of days to have it settle in, you know, what are your thoughts? Were you surprised at what you saw the other day?
Yeah, I thought they played really well. You know, there's a big challenge when you go to a place like Kansas State. They're an excellent team. They've got a lot of NFL prospects. That middle linebacker is a terrific player. You know, and Colin Klein's a good college quarterback. And, you know, I think they came in right away. And, you know, shows that they were there to play, and they hung with them for a while until, you know, eventually, you know, those guys just have such a tremendous talent that, you know, eventually they took over or were able to pull away. But I thought there was a lot that North Texas could take from that game just in terms of going forward.
Hey, Brett, special teams seem to be the culprit all night against K-State. I know you're the closest person to the program, and talk to McCarney a little bit about that. What are your thoughts? Is special teams something that we can look for an improvement on this coming week? What are your thoughts on that?
I would think so. I mean, the whole basis for your special teams is always, you know, your couple of kickers. And North Texas has got two really good ones in Atterbury and Olin. You know, it was really unusual to see, you know, Atterbury, you know, he shanked that one punt when he had a chance to kind of pin Kent State deep. You know, Olin missed an extra point. That field goal was just flat blocked. That guy came straight up the gut. I mean, he didn't really have much of a chance on that deal. But, you know, with those two guys, I think you got a basis for a really good special teams unit out there. And plus, you've got a really good special teams guy in Kent Riddle. It's not like you're having a it's not like the high school girls track coach is coaching your special teams. You know, this guy has been a special teams coach, you know, at Colorado and at Boise State. And, you know, he's done it his whole career, and he's been successful everywhere he's ever been. I just thought it was really odd that, you know, this year that they would really struggle, or, you know, especially one game really struggle. The only thing that really came to my mind after watching it when they, you know, kind of had some problems there is North Texas did lose a lot of those guys that made a ton of tackles last year. And a lot of those guys were defensive backs and linebackers who played a lot on special teams. And you start talking about, you know, the different players that were back there. And, you know, I'm not saying that those guys were all world or all conference or terrific players, you know, but, you know, a lot of those guys did do a lot. And you need to wonder if they're not missing a few of those guys a little bit in situations like that.
Brett, I know you had a interview with the Troy beat writer, which that's always enjoyable to kind of get it from the opponent's perspective. What do you think about this Troy game? I mean, how do you see North Texas matching up with Troy? You know, obviously it's an advantage having them at home, but they sure had a good performance against Mississippi State last week.
Yeah, I talked to Drew a little bit this week. Drew's a good friend of mine, kind of in the business friend. I've known him for years and years and years. Now he's going with us to Conference USA because he took a job covering UAB for a different paper in Alabama. So he's ironically kind of coming along. So I'll be able to see him down the line again. But, you know, I think it's a really interesting matchup just in the fact that Troy has got a terrific offense, and they throw the heck out of it. And Corey Robinson's about as good a, you know, mid-major college quarterback as you're ever going to find. That kid can chunk it. And he's been chunking it there for a long, long time, and he's always got good receivers. Chandler Worthy's a good player. He's got, you know, a ton of other guys to throw the ball to, and they just do a tremendous job of throwing it around. And plus, they run it pretty effectively as well with Sean Southward. And I don't know, and then, you know, that's going to be an interesting matchup for North Texas. And then I think the other thing to watch out for is, you know, Troy's not a terrific defensive team like they used to be back when they had DeMarcus Ware, Boris Lee, and guys like that. You know, it might end up being a bit of a shootout, and I wonder how North Texas secondary holds up against Corey Robinson. That might be the story of this game, if you ask me.
Does Apogee play? I mean, you know, having them at home, that you know, Apogee can get pretty loud. We saw that in the Texas Southern game. They're expecting a nice crowd with the family parents weekend coming up. Could Apogee make a difference in this game?
Yeah, have you gotten a lot? I mean, you talk to a lot of these people that come in, and you hear a lot of talk up in the press box. I mean, is it making an impact? Are these people surprised to hear the sound? You know, the crowd noise, even with, you know, medium sized crowds.
I don't know. I know this probably isn't a popular opinion. I don't know if it makes a big difference or not. I think the home field advantage is more of you being at home, sleeping in your own bed, and he, you know, drawing some energy from the crowd. I don't know if the crowd noise makes a ton of difference at all, really. I mean, the way that stadium's built, I think a lot of the noise escapes right out of it anyway. Especially, you know, at the wing zone, and, you know, it kind of gets out of there. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, if it ever is going to make a difference, this would be the week, because Troy, the way they run that offense, they snap the ball, they get down with the play, and they get right back to the line, and they just keep going. They run a high tempo offense, and they call a lot of plays at the line of scrimmage. So if there's going to be any crowd noise effect at all, you would think it would be this week. I just don't know how big a difference that really makes.
We had some guys that were injured that are going to be able to come back for this game, the biggest one being Sarge McCoy. Tell us what you've heard about his status, and then also if you could touch on Chad Polk, the linebacker that sustained the injury, and also Freddie Warner's status. Sorry to hit you with three at once, but.
Oh, no, and Dan McCarty just does not talk about injuries at all. It's just one of his things. He's kind of an old school guy. It's kind of, you know, more power to him. If he doesn't want to talk about injuries, he doesn't even talk about injuries. Some guys are very open with it. Some guys are very closed about it. And about all you'll ever get out of Coach McCarty is that guy's day to day, which means basically he's not dead, or he doesn't have a broken leg, or he doesn't have a broken arm, or something that's going to keep him out for the whole year. I mean, that's basically what you get from him, and you know, and that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. And that was what we were told this week. We were told that both Jeremy Phillips and Brandon McCoy were both day to day. Now sometimes he'll say a little more on his radio show. I don't know if Brandon will be back or not. It sounds like him and Jeremy probably will be back. I don't know how effective they'll be. I mean, you could really use them, because, especially McCoy, because they need to be able to get to Corey, and, you wonder how effective they'll be doing that without him. And as far as Polk goes, I heard through the grapevine, you know, I was told by one person that he was going to be out for quite a while, and then it turned out that that injury wasn't as serious as, you know, it appeared to be at first, and it looks like he'll be back this week, which will help. That gives him a lot more depth. And for when you're playing a team that snaps at 100 times a game, or even more than that, you know, that's probably going to help, just to have more bodies to roll in and out of there.
Okay, so Polk, we don't know for sure, but Polk maybe, Jeremy Phillips maybe, Sarge McCoy maybe. Now, I heard on the radio show Monday night, that they think Freddie Warner's going to come back, not for this game, but for Florida Atlantic. Have you heard anything more on Freddie Warner?
Yeah, I mean, they've maintained all along that he was going to be sometime in October. You know, and if he gets back for, you know, Atlantic, it wouldn't be a complete shock. You know, a lot of times when those things first happen, especially ACLs, I mean, the recovery time for those kids can vary greatly. And if he gets back in time for Atlantic, that would be awfully big. Although, you know, with him having been out for so long, you wonder how much they'll be able to get out of him at that point. So we'll have to see how it goes.
Brett, let me ask you about the running back rotation. They looked at Jimmer, gave a lot of looks to Jimmerson, also gave a lot to Bird. Can we expect that for the rest of the year? I mean, are we going to see pretty much a three-headed monster with Bird, Jimmerson, and Brown?
I would think so. I mean, they're really high on Jimmerson. They think a lot of him. I know a lot of North Texas fans think a lot of him. I think he's got a lot of potential. But, I mean, Bird also gives you that power type back. And Brown, I think that he brings a lot to the table. So unless Jimmerson really just, you know, gets to the point where he's head and shoulders better than everybody else by quite a ways, I would expect they'd use all three of those guys. I think there's something to be said for that. I mean, a lot of teams do use multiple running backs. It keeps those guys a little fresher. You know, it hedges your bets a little bit in case one of them gets injured. You know, I think it's probably a pretty good approach. And it seems to be what Dan McCarty said all along about what they would like to do.
So, Brett, One of the questions and one of the discussions we were having earlier was the Monroe situation. Are they that improved from this year? Are they the real deal? You know, a lot of people saying they're going to win or lose a bunch of conference games. This week they play against Baylor. You know, what do you expect out of those guys? It's turning into a crazy bit of Sun Belt football this year.
Well, I think the thing everybody overlooked with Monroe, and I mean, I thought about it too when I was sitting there writing Dave Campbell's Texas Football and a lot of other, and you know, and doing your preseason stuff and the magazine and things, is Monroe has everybody back. And Colton Browning's a good player. I mean, he was a good player last year. And when you start talking about bringing the whole gang back, I think there's something to be said for that. You know, they've got a bunch of really good players. They brought in a transfer from Arizona at linebacker who is, you know, one of those guys that's going to transfer in as a graduate student, play right away. So he's eligible right away. They've got a terrific front seven on defense. They've got a quarterback with experience. They've got some good wide receivers. And I always wondered, you know, if they were ever going to do it, this was going to be the year. And that's how you do it. I mean, if you're one of those teams and you catch fire and you win a big game like that at the beginning of the season, it gives you a ton of confidence. If you already have the talent to do it anyway, now if you're Monroe, you're looking at it and you've got a huge win on the board, and you start looking at it, you can think you'd get to 6 or 7 there. I mean, sure, they're looking down the road and thinking, okay, we got Florida Atlantic, they've got Tulane. You know, it starts to look pretty feasible for them to get to a bowl game. I wouldn't write them off. I mean, North Texas, I mean, that was a close game with them last year.
Well, I think you've accurately pointed out in your column and your blog, this game is huge.
Oh, I mean, lose you guys?
No, I was saying, Brett, as you pointed out in your column and your blog, this is a huge game for North Texas and for Troy. You know, it really, you know, could set you back, you know, especially for North Texas, you know, with all the momentum. Evan and I were talking before you came on, as North Texas fans, we haven't felt this much wind behind our back for as long a period of time in a while. And I understand we had 2 losses, but they were both, you know, decent showings against, you know, top 20 programs. So I think from a momentum standpoint, if you're Coach Mack or if you're Rick Villarreal or a North Texas fan, you really want to get this game in the bag before you head up to Florida Atlantic.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to be said for that. You know, as far as like getting a lot of momentum on your side, I think they've got a lot going for them right now. I just always hesitate to read a whole lot in to playing close against a really, you know, against a top 25 team. I think we're really going to find out what North Texas has got this week. I think Troy's a pretty good Sun Belt Conference team. We saw that against Mississippi State. You know, is North Texas going to be a top of the Sun Belt type team? Are they going to be able to compete with, you know, Western Kentucky and Lafayette and Arkansas State and teams like that? I think we're really going to find out what they've got. You know, because it could be one of those instances where, you know, playing Kansas State team that came out flat close, you know, doing some good things against LSU. I mean, that gave them a lot of confidence and a lot going for them. If they can build on it with a win over Troy, I think, you know, it lends a bit of legitimacy to what they did in the early part of the season. If they go out there and Troy, you know, ends up beating them, or, you know, the secondary really struggles against that team, I think, you know, you kind of look at it as potentially a step back and, you know, maybe kind of throws a bit of a wet blanket over what you did early in the season.
Brett, we've talked the football side of North Texas athletics to death tonight. I got to end our segment with you. You know, one of your favorite sayings is always trust in the Johns. Well, we can only trust in a John now. With Johnny Jones going to LSU, but the John that is remaining had kind of a setback, you know, a couple of losses back to back. What any reason for alarm over at the soccer complex?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think so. This is one of the tougher non-conference schedules they ever play. They've played. They darn near beat Long Beach State, or at least tied Long Beach State. They tied Baylor, which was a good result. It was kind of weird that they did lose to TCU at home, but TCU is a pretty good program. And they're a young team this year. They lost, like, six of their key players and from a conference championship team. And but they've got, like, 11, 12 freshmen that are playing. They'll be fine. Hedlund's always fine. That guy, he's about as reliable as you're ever going to get. I mean, they just leave him over there in his little corner of the athletic department world, and he continuously, you know, just cranks out winning team after winning team. The one thing that was interesting from the non-revenue perspective was that the volleyball team beat Baylor for the first time in forever in three straight. You know, they swept them the other day at home. That was a really good result for them. I think Ken Mierczyk is doing a lot of good things over there, and they're really kind of gotten it going there. So that was kind of the interesting development from last week.
All right, Brett. Well, we appreciate the time. Hopefully we will get to talk to you next week, and the team goes to 2-2. So we appreciate it. Anything to look forward to in the paper this week?
You know, the one thing that was interesting that I've got was something for tomorrow that I thought was pretty wild. There's only four fifth-year seniors on this team, and only three of them are scholarship guys. And they've got kind of an interesting story. I mean, they kind of had a rough road. They had a coaching change. They haven't won in forever. But, you know, these guys are down to their last chance to, you know, maybe make some noise in conference play. So I talked to a couple of them, you know, and about their journey and what they're hoping for in their last go-around on in Sunbelt Conference play. Okay, let's see if anybody remembers. Can you name the four fifth-year seniors on this team? What do you think, guys?
Jeremy Phillips.
Yep, that's one.
What's the Sarge?
No, McCoy came later.
Yeah, but I thought he was.
No, he's only like a sophomore. Or something.
All right, here's on the board.
Fortenberry Feely.
Yep, Fortenberry Feely.
So that's three. We're still missing one or two.
There's one more. There's only one more.
Oh man, I should know this.
Well, I'm just
Evan Cantley.
Oh, that's right. Yep.
Wow.
And Fortenberry was a walk-on, so it's pretty wild. Go back. That was that class that was so highly rated that had some JUCO players in it, and all those kids that signed that year. You know, you figure you'd redshirt about half of them or whatever. There's only four of them left from that class, which is pretty amazing when you think about it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, well, with all the changes, I'm nothing surprised around here anymore. Well, Brett, hey, we appreciate the time. We appreciate the time and all the good information. We'll look forward to that article, and we'll hopefully get to talk to you next week.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. You have a good night.
Okay, right, take care. All right, we got one more thing we got to talk about, because if we don't, we'll forget, and then we'll hate ourselves for it. But and we're going to promote this on the board, but Evan and I are actually doing a post-game show, and we're going to record it in Apogee Stadium. We're pretty excited about it. The thought process, I think, is the post-game show, they do a great job. It's a good show. We all listen to it. I know I do in my tailgating section after the game or driving home. But it's not quite long enough, you know. And so we want to try to give – and we've gotten that feedback from a lot of fans. So we want to try to give people a little bit more, maybe a little dessert to go with the dinner.
Right, and you know, logistically, it's been tough because we can do these kind of pods here, but we are going to actually be doing it up in the, and I know 90's asking about callers or a live audience. We will be actually in the press box and starting it as soon as the game's over. Here's the thinking on this: we get it, we start recording while Hank and George are still talking. By the time we're done, Hank and George are done, we'll have it uploaded to the website. So if you, which most people have, is on their cell phones, you have access to GoMeanGreen.com, you'll simply click the link and it'll start streaming to your phone. So if you can listen to your phone in your car for the next 20 minutes home, you're still trying to cross the bridge. By the time I get to the bridge, George and Hank are done.
Yeah.
So it's off to the piano playing lady. And so if you... you can hit that link, listen to the show. Right now, this is the format we're going to go with. Maybe later on we'll expand upon it, but right now this is what it is. So we'll be putting instructions on board and how we're going to do it. And if anybody wants to cover certain things or review certain parts of the game, you know, George and them kind of cover some of the basics. We're going to cover, you know, the tailgating. We're going to cover that what we thought of the game, and it just gives you something to listen to, 20-30 minute podcasts on the way home or the next day.
Or when you get home, if you get it, you know, I always get on my desktop and check scores, or the next day when you wake up. I know some people get tired and are ready to go to bed, but we're excited about it. Appreciate the athletic department giving us the chance to do it, and we'll see how it goes.
Right. So, and if anybody wants to, can come up with a better way to stream it live, we'd love to do it. We'll have internet access. But right now, giving it as the first game, home game was live to tape is what this is going to be, because it's going to be live to tape. Won't be live, but it'll be about 15 minutes past live.
We're going to do our very best to have it up and ready as soon as the post game show with George and Hank and the Mean Green Network is over. But give us a little bit of wiggle room in the first couple times, because we're just doing this and we're gonna have to wing it a little bit.
If we got the mobile setup good, then maybe we can do one from the Mean Green tailgating machine.
We're gonna work on that too.
We'll do that. I'd love to hear drunk fans' opinions.
There's plenty of them out there.
All right, so with that, we will go ahead and turn up the fight song, which is back this week. No, ain't no sunshine when she's gone. Caught hell for that. So with that, everybody have a good one. Go Mean Green.
Go Mean Green.